This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on Friday, December 19th, 2008. Commodity Week is a production of WILL, a broadcasting service of the College of Media at the Land-Grant College in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Crude oil posted a three handle this week, more than $110 off its summer high. What does that mean for corn futures? We'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, we'll take a look back at 2008 and look ahead to 2009. Our panelists today are Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in West Bend, Wisconsin, Ed Dunn of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. OPEC has now cut oil production by more than 4 million barrels a day since September, and oil futures have yet to stabilize. January crude, which went off the board on Friday, tagged a three handle. What does crude's continuing slide mean for grains, Ed Dunn?
Well, the slide in crude was kind of caused by itself, Dave. We saw high energy prices made everything very expensive freight, and it's really destroyed grain demand to the point that until we feel confident about the demand, we're not going to build grain prices higher. So the weaker crude will help us in the long run, but we're still not there to that point. So until we see an improvement in crude, grain is really going to struggle.
Ed Dunn is with Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Pete, does it give you hope for corn futures that deferred oil contracts are significantly above the spot month oil contract?
Well, the Febs were in the 42 range at the end of the day today. That was, 8 to 10 above where the January had been, so that's better. But still, under 50 is not very good for corn and soybeans. Corn is an energy because of ethanol. When energies are lower, that hurts our corn usage. And I think that nearby, that's going to hurt long-term. The lower prices cure lower prices. It should help long-term. But right now, we're worried about the world economy and usage, and we have what we need already.
Pete Manhart is with Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Jackie, is there something you want to add with the crude oil?
Well, I think when you look at the crude situation, it's one where until, you know, these cuts are supposed to take place on January 1st. I think in general the trade doesn't trust that all the countries that are involved in OPEC are going to do this. We haven't seen them follow suit. And so until that happens and we actually do see the dramatic cuts, it's going to be difficult for them to get all excited.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson Group out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Jackie, we'll stay with you. Analysts are trying to determine when inflation will enter the marketplace, given all the efforts of the Fed to stimulate the economy. Will inflation show itself in the next 30 to 60 days or later? And how severe do you feel it will be? And perhaps, most importantly, what does it mean for grain prices?
Well, in general, when you have inflation, you normally have a lower dollar. I think we saw some of the reaction to that, you know, and to the printing of money going on already this week when we saw the drop in the dollar down to the 62% retracement and the increases in gold. I think some of what went on in the dollar today was more profit-taking, you know, at the end of the week before the holiday. In the long run, it would be a very positive thing for the grain market.
And, Ed, the U.S. dollar, let's continue with that subject. It's been on this incredible roller coaster ride in recent sessions, lost almost $10 in 8 trading sessions before finishing the week higher at essentially its 100-day moving average. Do you think the bias for the dollar is higher or lower over the next month?
I would think the bias is still lower, Dave. And that being said, that's part of the reason why a lot of folks, even though we're sitting here saying we probably ought to be buying puts or maybe selling some grain, don't see the bottom falling out of the grain market. A, the dollar probably doesn't have a tremendous amount of upside in the current conditions. And secondly, you know, funds have liquidated a majority of their positions in the grain market, so it's going to be hard to see a lot of that sell pressure there.
March corn had a high on the week of 402 and three quarters, a low of 370 and a quarter. March took over the lead month option this week, March corn finishing at 380 and three quarters. That's up 21 and a quarter from last week on a week-to-week lead option settlement basis. On the March contract itself, it's up 7 and a quarter on the week. December corn finishing the week at 417 and a half, up 5 from last week. Pete, corn demand has been, in a word, lousy this year. Let's not make any bones about that. Exports are running some 50% behind a year ago, and corn crush for ethanol has slowed. For corn to rally much above $4.50, it's been said we need to find new demand. Can you make a case for demand picking up in the next 90 days?
Well, I think the lowered prices. We got down to 290 on the lead month. We went immediately back up to 402 here in the March. So that shows us if we get too low, their demand steps forward. So low prices do create demand. I don't know if we have to get that low again, but I think we could try to test that again in the next month and a half. But I think that will bring out more demand.
Jackie?
And one of the things I think that we have to keep in perspective is you know, that the demand has been lousy. Why has the demand been lousy? Because it's been almost impossible for importers to get letters of credit. And even if they had a letter of credit, it wasn't always accepted by a grain-selling company here in the United States. So one of the things I think, the first thing you have to watch is the Baltic freight rates. And the Baltic freight rates have been increasing. So in that respect, it says that there is not necessarily grain, but there is commodity demand that is beginning to build.
Ed, as we look at what the USDA has been doing with the corn crush, we see in its last report they lowered it by 300 million bushels. Friday, the RBOB traded under a dollar while ethanol futures were over $1.50. Will USDA need to continue pulling back on ethanol crush in future reports, and if so, to what levels?
They are going to cut it back, Dave. You know, they cut some $300 million out of it last month, and look for that to continue to just be tweaked down, maybe a 25 here or a 50 there. And you know, that's part of the reason why you could almost argue that a lot of this has been factored in, Dave. I mean, they saw that 300 number. It was a big shock. The grain market opened 10 lower that day and finished 8 higher. So it's kind of like what Pete was saying. We've seen these lower futures prices. We've traded them, and now we're probably going to see a little bit of stabilization.
Pete, corn technicals seem to be supportive. The recent rally has put March futures back into the range that it traded from October into November. A 23.6 retracement of the lead option off the July highs would be 402. Will corn futures find a settlement above that level before year's end?
I think they've got a shot at it before year's end. I think we've got a shot in thin trade of doing that. But I think that real trouble is after the first of the year, with all the cash grain coming to market to be delivered, and also before the 1st of March when farmers need money for their income taxes, we could see it drift back to those lows before we really do take off.
January soybeans had a high of 877 and a quarter, a low of 840. January beans finishing the week at 868 and a quarter, up 13 and a quarter from last week. November, 899, up 25 from a week ago. Jackie, much like corn, soybean futures have rallied into an area of resistance around $9 or so. Lead option bean futures had broken a midterm uptrend line drawn through its July-August highs. A 61.8% retracement from the November highs to the December lows is right around 902. Where do you think beans will finish on the year?
Well, I think they've got an opportunity to possibly touch the $9 level. I don't expect that they're going to go above $9 necessarily. We're going to have, you know, when you're trading throughout the holiday season, it's tough because you have a lot of different factors going on. There's short covering, there's position changing, there's all kinds of things. And so I think we could touch it. It doesn't necessarily mean we'll finish at it.
The bias in South American weather has been to the dry side. What is the potential, in your estimation, Ed Dunn, for a weather recovery rally? And if so, what level do you like for prices to rally to?
Well, yeah, I think 9 in beans, 4 in corn are two magical numbers, and it's going to, like Jackie said, it may touch it, but don't look for it to close there. We've got a lot of farm clients that are going to be selling some grain in late December, early January to pay off some bills, make some tax men happy, and anytime those prices rally up there, we're going to touch it and probably not close there because a lot of these resting orders are going to get hit with the elevator and settle back. So look for some selling opportunities, but you better have your orders in.
March wheat had a high on the week of 575.5, a low of 515. March wheat finishing the week at 563.25, up 33 from last week on a lead option settlement basis. From week to week, March finished 50.25 higher. July wheat finished at 587.75, up 51 from a week ago. Ed, we'll stay with you and note that wheat futures did take out its 50-day moving average this past week. Does wheat have the potential to pull corn and soybeans higher? And if so, under what scenario?
Well, my fear, Dave, is actually the opposite. I'm fearing that wheat is probably the heavy of the three legs right now. I know there are some arguments, but right now wheat is overpriced in the world markets. Export interest, we seem to get passed up every time right now. Plenty of supplies to go around, and I think of the three that could pull us up, it would be corn more so than wheat pulling the other two.
Jackie?
Well, I think wheat's got the greatest potential to pull us up right now. When you just look at the big picture now, not necessarily before the end of the year, but I think in general it could be the leader again, and it might be the surprising leader. You look at some of the problems that there are in the wheat areas in Australia, and now with the weather that we're having, there's a lot of question about the wheat situation out on the plains, and as long as you have that, there's a heavily speculated market. So I think that just from that perspective, it has a chance. Doesn't mean it'll do it in cash.
Pete, will let you cast your vote as well.
Well, I disagree with both of them. I think beans will lead us higher because of usage from China. I think that worldwide, wheat, we've got more than we need. We've got lots of feed wheat that's butting out corn. So I think in the nearby, I think beans could be the leader. I think wheat is being pushed up right now by the U.S. weather. People are worried about the cold weather, and that's usually overblown, and it'll usually drop back down. So I'd say it's a selling opportunity in wheat.
December live cattle, a high on the week of 86.90, a low of 83. December live cattle finishing the week at 83 even, up 277.5. January feeders finishing the week at 93.50, up 632.5. Lean hogs for February, a high of 62.97.5, a low of 61.60. February finishing the week on a new lead basis, again at 61.70, up 567.5. Jackie, we had a cattle on feed report on Friday. What caught your eye in those numbers?
Well, in general, I think when you look at you look across the board, it was a very supportive and possibly bullish, could be considered bullish report. We had stronger marketings than what they expected. Placements were right on. A little bit higher on feed was good. I think when you look at the weights, the placements and the heavier weights were lighter, so the nearby months should get some really good support. And if you looked at the comparison to last year, the lighter weight animals, we placed less animals there. So in general, that should continue to support those months. So it doesn't look like the cattle are going away.
Let's go ahead and put on our speculation hat just for a second, Ed Dunn, and ask you, what is your best bet at the moment for any commodity?
Best bet for a rally in any commodity right now?
Yes, sir.
It might be a little bit on the interesting side. I'm interested in what the other two have to say. But if crude oil, you know, if the energies back off just a little bit more in the first part of the year, I think the energies market have as much of an explosive opportunity as anything. And, of course, then corn and these others are going to piggyback. But to me, if I had a little money to play with, I think I'd look at energies right after the first of the year.
Pete, very quickly, a commodity.
Well, I think the crude oil and the heating oil, if you're looking to lock in some things, you ought to be looking at locking in some fuel with heating oil. But I think because of the low prices, Chinese buying of beans could push them up sharply before they head back down into after the first of the year.
Jackie, your best bet?
I'm right in the ballgame as far as I'm concerned. I think it's crude oil and beans. Those would be my two choices by far.
Are you on the go and want to know how the commodity markets opened or closed? AM 580 Agriculture has a solution with our new market analyst portal. Dial 217-333-3434 to get prices and commodity analysis from the opening and closing bells daily. We update the billboard twice a day at 10:15 a.m. and 3:15 p.m. That's Central Time, giving you market analysis to make smart decisions. Get on the map. The number to call is 217-333-3434.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. For those of you that think that winter begins on December 21st, well, Mother Nature believes in the meteorological start of winter on December 1st. This was another cold and wintry week in Illinois. Temperatures ranged from 6 degrees below normal in southern Illinois to 12 degrees below normal in northwestern Illinois. A good snow cover in northern Illinois helped temperatures get down into the single digits by the middle of the week, with some zeros reported on Thursday morning. The northwestern half of Illinois received above normal precipitation this week as well. The first round was from a storm on Tuesday and early Wednesday when 3.5 to 5.5 inches of snow fell from the Quad Cities eastward through the Chicago area. The second round of precipitation came late on Thursday into Friday as another storm lifted out of the plains towards Illinois. It spread a swath of freezing rain, sleet, and snow across much of the Midwest. We are not done with the wintry weather. Weather systems are marching across the country, and another quick-moving system will bring a chance for snow this weekend. That will be followed by sharply colder weather by the start of the week. Another system will approach Illinois by Tuesday, and that could bring some snow to much of the state late Tuesday into Christmas Eve. After that, fair weather and slowly moderating temperatures will finish out Christmas week. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
This is Dave Dickey, and our panelists today are Ed Dunn of Strategic Farm Marketing, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group. 2008 will go down as one of the top 10 years in history, I feel, for volatility in commodities. Crude oil futures, for example, have seen a 75% slide from a high of over $145 just 6 months ago. Corn futures rallied from 469 in January to 762.5 in June and back down to $2.90 in December. Soybeans rallied from 1189.5 in January to 1663 in July and back to 776.25 this month. And when we look at 2008, what will we see as the key market movers, Ed?
Well, we go back to what caused the rally. You had from the demand side, we had what we call them Asian tigers. You had the economies over there growing 8 to 12%. You had populations in China and India growing 30 to 35 million a year. The incomes improved over there. Their diets demanded more. Obviously, the Olympics was a big part of it. Even fundamentally, we had back-to-back world wheat crop failures, and stocks were at an all-time low. So, you know, from a demand and supply side, you could argue why this thing rallied. Why'd we fall apart? It doesn't take long to understand the government went after inflation by attacking the energy speculator. And what better way to put money back into the economy of the U.S. than have that guy who's used to spending $50 a week on gasoline now spend $20 or $25. So we saw that attack. We saw over-leveraged financial firms. We had credit problems. And that's obviously the financial side of it is what was the biggest manipulator to the downside.
Jackie, it sounds to me like it was a perfect storm.
Oh, yeah, I guess you could call it a perfect storm. It just depends upon if you were in the boat or you were in the ocean. I think a lot of what drove the market, too, was the lower dollar. And we had seen, you know, the dollar go significantly lower while we saw gold go higher, some pretty strong inflationary indications. And what it really did was it made it so easy for anybody from a different country who had a currency that was trading strong against the American dollar to just really buy our products. And one of the things I think that we see, or people don't really see right now, is that the American dollar, even though it's gone up, it traded at the lowest level it's traded against the Japanese yen since 1995 this week. And so, you know, considering the fact that Japan's our biggest buyer of corn, that's a pretty positive thing for us. So I think in general, if you were on the right side, it was a great thing. If you weren't, it wasn't so much fun.
Pete, your thoughts?
Well, I think it goes back to we had so much demand from all over the world, and we were in euphoria about how great everything was that people just continued to buy. And then all of a sudden we found out that stuff that got started in the 80s and the 90s in the housing business was running us. And then that rolled the ball, and the snowball now is only about a third way down the mountain. We've still got more than half of the housing problems left. And that could keep our economies of the world in deep trouble. And we found out that it wasn't just in the U.S. It was in the entire world. So the move was up because of usage was great, and we were euphoric about how great everything was. And then we found out that those five scoops of sand they'd been thrown in a bag and selling as an investment really weren't sand. They were something else. And that's when we rolled downhill. And we're only about a third of the way down in the housing industry.
So Pete says that the housing mess will carry over into 2009.
And 10.
What else will carry over?
Well, the credit constraints are going to continue. It's going to continue to prevent free trade, as Jackie has mentioned. You know, the overall economic outlook, I agree with Pete 100%. We're going to continue this thing 12 to 18 months. You know, on a positive, you want to say that the lower energy prices are going to give us more disposable income. But bottom line, you know, those things are going to stick with us. Another thing that we need to pay attention in this industry is with some of the new president's appointments, the potential of the SEC and the CFTC being combined. Look for many new rules in this industry, and it's going to protect the consumers. It's going to protect the producers. It's not going to help the speculators, and it's not going to help the fund traders, and that might limit some of the volatility to help bring us back up.
But it also might limit some liquidity.
Absolutely. You know, which, you know, argue that that's probably a good thing as far as how do you want to say it? You know, maybe we don't see the extremes either way.
Jackie, what do you think will carry over into 2009?
Well, I think, you know, it's always interesting. I just in listening to Ed talk, you know, we talk about limiting the speculators and limiting volatility. But the reality is that speculators are what keep the volatility under control. They're not the ones that drive it out of control. It's the lack of liquidity in a market that drives speculation to the maximum. And I think that's where the U.S. people are really misinformed. But I'm expecting, as we carry into 2009, we're probably going to get an Obama bounce. You know, a new president coming in, very pro-ethanol, you know, very pro the biofuels. And so I think, in general, the attitude of the country at the moment is extremely negative. I think that with a new president and those types of things, we could see a shift in that attitude. And let's face it, what we're dealing with the most here is perception and the perception on Wall Street. And Wall Street is what runs the show. And so when the perception is negative, everybody feels negative. I guess, you know, in my old rule of thumb, when I heard every farmer tell me that the world was coming to an end, I knew it was time to buy corn. If you talk to people right now at Wall Street or anywhere else, the world has come to an end. And you can only go so far and so low.
Pete, let me ask you this. What lessons do we take away from watching the markets in 2008? And I guess I'm thinking as a hedger that we might apply in 2009.
Well, I think we have to take advantage of opportunities when they're thrown in front of us by either selling cash, or if we're not available to sell cash, which we weren't at times this year, we need to either buy puts or sell futures. And I think that was the biggest thing that happened in 08 that made people really well. It was the people that did sell $6.50 corn, $7 corn, $7.40 corn, instead of waiting until it got to 10 and it never got there, and they haven't made any sales yet. I think we still have to take advantage of bounces by selling or buying puts or hedging. And I think those opportunities will come. I just don't think they'll be at as high levels. On the bounce we were talking about earlier on what's going to happen in 2010, I think we will have this Obama bounce. People think that he's going to get something done. I think the problem is if he doesn't all of a sudden get anything done, we're in such a deep hole that that could, after a fairly short period of time, turn into a negative for him, because it's such a morass out there that all this money that's being thrown out there, I don't know if anybody's seeing any of it. It's just going into a black hole and leaving us.
A big thing that each of your listeners and the producers need to do is build a better bond with your banker. You know, the summer of 2008, it's easy to sit back and say, well, we should have sold $6 and $7 corn for 2009. The problem is you couldn't. None of your country elevators were taking it. So the people that were able to jump in there and hedge could only do it from a cash flow standpoint with having a great relationship with that banker and having it set up. And I'm looking at 2009, and I'm looking at fall basis levels at most facilities. You're 50, 60, 70 under for fall-delivered corn right now. So if I'm going to forward contract corn for 2009, I'm not that excited about a cash contract. But the elevators, after the lesson they learned in carrying hedges, they're not going to give away the basis yet. So the best thing is for you to take a position on the board. Hedge to arrive contracts at the elevators, they're not going to be that crazy about it. So the biggest lesson is get a great relationship with that banker and keep him educated.
Jackie?
Boy, I just couldn't agree with you more. And I think one of the strategies that works well is get puts in place. If you get a bounce in the market, you can roll a put to a higher level. You leave some money on the table, but you can fix yourself with a higher floor. And that's the name. You know, on a put situation, you have fixed risk. You know where you're at. And so I think in the past, we've seen people reluctant to do that. They just don't want to take a position and then roll it higher and leave anything on the table. And I think if there's anything we learned from 2008, we just can't afford to not do that.
And now a quick final word from our panelists. Pete?
Well, I think we have to be ready to move on bounces up. And what we just talked about puts or whatever with your banker are very important. But I think we need to protect higher prices when they do come. I think we will have opportunities. I just don't think they're going to be as high as they were in 08.
Jackie?
Well, I couldn't agree more. And I think I like what Ed said. The relationship with the banker is probably one of the most important things that there is. Having a marketing line of credit, just like we have an agronomy line of credit.
And Ed?
Yeah, with the volatility that's probably going to remain in these markets, where we could be 10 to 12 lower within the first 20 minutes and then limit up by the end of the day, have orders in place. You know, don't expect to work with your advisor, your broker, and say, keep an eye on it, give me a call when something happens. By the time he calls you, you've missed it. So keep your order in place, but look for better opportunities to sell the crop in 2009 than with what we're looking at right now.
We would like to thank our panel, Ed Dunn of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in West Bend, Wisconsin. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.